freaking out of.
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Yeah, I was thinking about Brock. I was thinking about that Jim Mora rant. Is that a rant? I guess it's a rant. The Jim Mora rant about Brock Huard. He's not a friend of mine. I was thinking about that this weekend, actually, as Bobby Wagner went off. Best game he's had in 2 years.
In all fairness to my comment.
Exactly, right? And I was just wondering, like, did you fire up Bobby the way you fired up? I mean, obviously, I had nothing to do with this. It was just you who was out there ranting and raving about Bobby Wagner last week.
I mean, you just asked questions. So if you ask the question, you're not really giving an opinion.
That's
right?
I'm just asking.
No, you can ask anything in this day and age.
Is Bobby Wagner still a good player? Totally fair question.
I mean, as long as it's a question mark, you're fine.
It's like, the person who comes in.
The way you said it is you're like, is he even good?
Well, I didn't say quite like that.
I think you did.
I don't remember it that way. But
I mean, I asked a question.
and then like axe and smash, demolition, Brock. You came up off the top rope with the elbow out and just smacked it right into poor Bobby Wagner's head.
Yes, I think I said something along the lines that he may be the third best middle linebacker in the division. That Fred Warner, who we got to watch in San Francisco, like Tony Romo said, was out playing him. Kaiser with the Rams was just unleashing it and running around and running, hitting in ways that, you know, if you just put on the all 22 and watch the previous couple weeks, you see a Bobby that just looked tired. He looked a little bored. He was pretty angry after the games. Pretty, you know, kind of sulky. Mm-hmm.
Downtrodden, a little sulky.
Right.
Almost emo Bobby.
Are you guys done?
Yeah.
Are you done with this? Yeah.
I think so. Despondent.
I don't know, bro. I don't know whether Bobby listens to our podcast. I don't know that. I do know that I heard from a lot of other folks this weekend who do, because all of them are saying, like, whatever you said to Bobby, it worked. Because he's out there running around like a chicken with his head cut off in a good way. He was amazing.
Garoppolo takes the shotgun snap. Seven-step drop gets hit. Bobby Wagner just drills him and drops him back at the 15-yard line. Dave, you've been talking about that. Bobby has come three or four times. That time he breaks free and is in the backfield. Garoppolo is dropped, and now the Seahawks are going to get the ball back in pretty good field position.
All right, Brock, in the interest of me just being the person who asks questions, I mean, I'm not a troublemaker or anything, just ask questions. Two questions for you. One, why was he so much better in this game than he's been for the last year and a half? And two, can they replicate that, please?
Yes. Yes, on the second one, you can replicate that because you can control, and I'll say this during broadcasts, and a lot of times just with the emotional swings in broadcasts or you know, what the tone you want to set with your team, especially on defense, but on offense as well, how aggressive you want to be. There is no question, Mike, the numbers don't lie. They blitzed 51% of the time in that game. And if you look at the first three quarters of it, it was close to 70%. Right in the fourth quarter, they dialed back when they took the 30-7 lead. You know, then it was like, okay, we'll just kind of get back to what we did the previous five games, play a bunch of zone, rush four, not hit Nick Mullins, and, you know, let him throw for 230 in one quarter. So, yes, they absolutely, what did Pete say? We turn, Mike.
Mm. It's just
to
a turn.
Everything we turn.
We're taking a turn. Yes.
Made a little turn. Now, did it help that you were playing a one-legged Jimmy Garoppolo that doesn't scramble?
I'd like to say yes.
Because
with a two-legged Nick Mullins, they look like the same old Seahawks defense we've seen for the last 6 weeks.
Did it help? There was no Deebo Samuel.
Yeah, because
right?
he's
didn't
their best
feel
player.
Necessarily threatened on the outside, even down Shaq Griffin. Yes. Those factors helped. Like if you were going to say, when do we want to turn up the aggressive meter? Which game do we want to start bringing it? Will they do the same to Daniel Jones? Will they do the same to whoever's playing quarterback in Washington? Will do the same to Sam Darnold or Flacco? Yes. So some of those circumstances aid you. There's no question about that. Josh Allen. This upcoming Sunday will be fascinating because he's a guy that can make mistakes when you pressure. He's a guy that can run for 30 or 40 yards, who's a terrific athlete if you get out of your lane. So I think it was a perfect set of circumstances for the second question you asked, which is, can you sustain this? And by the way, throw in Jamal Adams, who wants to play that way anyway. And yes, you can sustain that. As for Bobby, his 11 tackles, his 4 QB hits, 3 tackles for loss, and his 2 sacks, he was the biggest beneficiary of that turn. He was. And I'm very curious if, you know, if we were the ones who chatted with Pete on Monday, and I don't know if he would have told us this on the air, maybe off the air, did Bobby finally say, enough is enough? I'm sick and tired of playing passive. I can't watch myself on film backpedaling when I'm a 250-pound battering ram that needs to play going downhill. And I'm curious what those conversations with Ken Norton were like.
Yeah, I always, you know, talk to them about blitzing more. So whenever they call my number or whenever they, choose to put that in the game plan, I get excited and I try to do the best that I can.
Well, I mean, look, they obviously used him in some different ways. Jake told me that one on Monday when I was on with them, saying, well, you know, it was a different scheme, and they schemed a little bit differently and put Bobby in some different... Fine, whatever you have to do. Remember, the issue here is not anybody saying Bobby Wagner is a bad player, a bad person, or anything. We love Bobby Wagner. The question is, where has the Bobby Wagner we all fell in love with been for the last year and a half?
And
whether it's a him thing or a Seahawks thing.
Yes.
And I don't know. Geez, I don't know. I don't know whether Bobby Wagner's lost a step and isn't as aggressive as he used to be, or is catching blocks because he doesn't want to get hurt. I don't know any of that. Or I don't know whether or not the guys up front aren't doing what they're supposed to do, or the scheme isn't set up for him anymore. But I do know you paid a guy $18 million to be the stalwart in the middle of your defense, and then it hasn't worked out that way for the last year and a half.
Yes.
So somebody's got to fix it. And if the Seahawks were able to fix that through scheme, then start scheming that way more often.
Correct. Correct. But that's simple, but you know the trade-off to that. And the trade-off is what? Pete hates giving up big plays.
But I don't think it was just blitzing. I mean, it's not just that Bobby came and blitzed a few times, Brock. I mean, those were big plays, don't get me wrong. But he was good in the rest of the game, not just in the blitzes.
Yeah, he was aggressive.
Right.
Yeah, they wound him up.
Right.
Like Salky on the hardwood. Go
you
hack away.
You don't
want
to see that, dude.
Right. Dan Gatzert going down.
I'll get you 5 fouls in 2 minutes.
I mean,
don't you worry.
You look like Teen Wolf in your uniform. Go act like him when he gets all mad and all hairy.
Shots
and go knock
gratuitous.
Some dudes out on that basketball court.
So does this really come down to that you guys really did? You lit the fire. Like, we didn't start the fire. No, we did start the fire.
I don't know. I don't want to say
Rock and Salk started the fire? Is
no.
that what happened?
I think that there were many. I mean, Jim Moore was on this. There were a lot of people who were on this topic this week. It didn't take a brain surgeon to watch the games and say, hey, the guy who you paid $18 million to isn't playing like an $18 million
a
year player.
But in our market, not many people will like to say it.
I didn't see a single beat writer write that article in the 2 days leading up
either.
After that game. Not one. Around the team.
Well,
not one.
Whatever. It was nice to see Bobby do what he needed to
do. Well, hold on.
And it was nice to see the Seahawks get him
ready. Wait. We also have history with Bobby, okay?
Do we?
If we remember correctly, on that really awkward day.
You know, this is... come on.
Is that to say that Earl can now put his name back in his mouth?
Huh?
What'd you say, bro?
What was that now?
Come again?
So you're saying so... You're saying this week or last week somebody played the Brock and Salk podcast for Bobby. By the way, no chance that happened. But let's pretend let's pretend that happened. You think Bobby's instant reaction was, oh, that's the guy who asked me that stupid question about Earl Thomas's name in my mouth? There's no way.
Is that to say that Earl can now put his name back in his mouth?
All right. We're done with this. We're time to move on. We don't have all day here. This is a podcast.
Nobody's putting Earl Thomas's name in their mouth.
No,
these days.
Nobody seems to have any
interest.
Heard a
word.
No.
But let me just okay. If you're ready to move on from Bobby, let me just say this. Bobby does listen, okay? Because I sat in a production meeting before a preseason game where it was pretty uncomfortable, and not uncomfortable with many in that room, but maybe most uncomfortable with yours truly. that was just kind of asking those questions a couple years ago. And yeah, he made it uncomfortable. So do I think in on his drive home, I don't know what he drives, something pretty nice. Do I think he went as the hundreds of thousands to millions do and go to our podcast and listen to every word? No. Do I think that some people around him and some of those folks absolutely said, man, do you see go-to guys, Jim Moore's article he wrote about you? Do you know that old morning show that got that really popular podcast? Do you know they're talking about you? They're saying you're not the best middle linebacker in the game anymore.
And Pete Carroll,
these guys always
I really appreciate your attempts to make us seem relevant, Brock, but we're a couple of old hacks, man.
Never forget that Michael Bennett found Jim Moore's column behind a paywall in the Kitsap Sun.
True.
They will find this stuff.
Well, somebody.
And Hasselback has told me the story, too, about different players. Back in the day, D-Jack. You know, they were in team meeting, and like Holmgren brought up this newspaper article, and Matt's like, oh my gosh, really? This is going to motivate us? And D-Jack was just out of his mind that week. So, yeah, I'm not going to diminish it. I'm not going to say that that Bobby's a P1 of ours by any means, but that guy does listen, and he heard some of that noise and criticism. But more importantly, he demanded that he be used more. Play to my skill set. Let me go be the hammer and hit the nail instead of the nail that's getting hammered by all of these offenses having their way with us.
Well, then that's a further indictment of Ken Norton Jr. That once again, even he's been criticized for the last 6 weeks, and this week he finally uses his all-pro linebacker in a manner that makes him effective.
Yeah, I mean,
what's their record? Excuse me, how many turnovers do they have? Excuse me, what does Pete Carroll ask me to do?
Stop. You know this team is not good because of their defensive strategy.
Well, hold on. The Seahawks are a good team. Let's stop. The Seahawks are a good team.
6-1.
Phenomenal team.
They're one of the, I would say they're one of the favorites to win the Super Bowl.
Correct.
Right? Can we all agree that almost halfway through the season, they're one of the favorites to win the Super Bowl? They've earned that.
Yes.
There are also a lot of terrible teams in the league this year. Can we agree on that?
Yep.
Maybe it sure seems like more than normal. I'll go through it in a minute. And at the very least, there's a lot of flawed teams in the NFL. And both of those things can be true at once. The Seahawks can be a very good team, albeit a flawed one themselves. And the league can be a little bit more flawed than normal. And all those things can be true at the same time. But they are a good team. They have the best offense we've seen in franchise history, right?
Yep.
The Seahawks ever had a better offense than they do right now? They got the presumptive favorite for MVP, a quarterback. They have arguably the best wide receiving core in the league. We'll ask Greg Jennings about that here in a little bit. They get the best offensive line they've had at least since 2014 and probably since earlier than that. They've got a gaggle of effective tight ends who are all playing well, at least most of them. And they have a top third of the league running back when he's healthy. You add that up, that's the best offense, Brock, we've seen certainly in our time here, and I would argue in the history of the Seahawks. When have they had a better offense than that?
Correct. Craig Russell's thrown 26 touchdowns in 7 games. He threw 26 touchdowns in 2 other seasons combined, 20 in 1 year, 21 in another. So, yeah, I mean, he's on pace to throw for over 50 touchdowns right now. And the schedule in December may give him that opportunity to just do that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
he hasn't played the Jets. He hasn't played Washington.
Correct.
He hasn't played the Giants. I mean, he's got some games coming up against some really putrid teams.
Yes.
Like, really bad.
Yes.
I mean, we've seen them play some flawed teams. They're going to play some bad ones.
What I said about Ken Norton, I will stand by. And I've been critical of Ken. And do I think he's going to be the coordinator here for the next 5 years? Probably not. We'll see how the rest of this plays out. But he works under Pete Carroll. And Pete Carroll's philosophy is not been a blitz-first guy. For his time at USC, his time in Seattle, that's not who he is. He wants to make you earn it. He wants to stay on top. He wants to limit big plays. You know, that has been who he is. And so I think Ken Norton's also got to get the blessing of Pete to say, hey, man, at what point can we, change this?
Well, they have
this isn't working.
Because as we said, as good as they are, they're also flawed themselves.
Yes.
They're a flawed team. They generate almost no pressure without blitzing. They are incredibly suspect to late-game comebacks, as we've seen in, I don't know, every game this year. Literally
did
every
you think
game.
It was good, did you think that 2-point convert, it was going to be a 1-score game?
Yeah.
I really did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, if Garoppolo had been in there, I feel like they blow them out and it's not even a question.
Correct.
But the second they brought in Nick Mullins,
I know.
Here we go.
No.
Uh-oh.
Not this guy. This guy's a kryptonite.
He kills them.
This guy's thrown for 2,000 yards in three games against them.
It's true. Like, get Nick Mullins off the field. Bring in C.J. Beathard if you have to, but
as soon
don't.
As he came, it was, no, not that guy.
Get Garoppolo back in the game. They have a little propensity to give up the late game
comeback.
He
should be their designated quarterback against the Seahawks.
Yes.
If I was coaching the 49ers,
it's fair.
Mullins would be my designated Seahawk killer.
Is Nick Mullins going to be the backup quarterback when he's a free agent here in Seattle?
Just to keep him away from the Niners?
Yes.
Sure. I'd take him in a flash.
Yes.
That guy looks like the best. He looks Joe Montana again.
Yes.
He gets against the Seahawks like, uh-oh, here come. Why just throw 16 on him and let him do his thing? My gosh. And their defense, you know, the one thing they do is they turn teams over.
Got
to give them credit.
Absolutely.
They come up with turnovers, but they're flawed. Here's the good news, Brock. And I think that the first thing that the Seahawks are a really good team, and the second one is that they're a flawed team. The first paragraph has a better chance of being true at the end of the year than the second.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some of their flaws may diminish. They're never going to become a great defense, but they are going to get back in the next few weeks, in theory. Jamal Adams, Carlos Dunlap, Snacks Harrison, Rasheem Green, maybe more on the way beyond that. I mean,
Darrell Taylor, maybe. They
are going to get some guys back that should help them, and they don't need to make the defense all world. They just need to not be terrible.
Correct.
Just be okay.
And in particular,
even mediocre.
In your matchups in your division. Because as you referenced, who you've got left, you know, and Buffalo will be a tremendous challenge this weekend. It's going to be an awesome game to call. Can't wait to watch it, you know, but Buffalo's got some flaws, and we've seen that over the course of the season, and their QB is going to be kind of an enigma, I think, for Pete and Ken to game plan against and what they want to do. If Jamal plays, you know that he is going to be in their ear, like Bobby was in their ear, to turn it up, that we can make this guy and force him into some mistakes. But yeah, I think with what you got, it comes down to, you know, those two Rams games, Cardinals games, the Niners now with Garoppolo and Kittle largely lost for the entire season. I mean, I can't imagine them being a factor. So, you know, you're sitting here. What did you say last week or 2 weeks ago, man? You just keep banking these wins, and you're sitting here at 6-1. And if you can go get it this weekend, you know, with your third East Coast 10 a.m. trip, and you're sitting at 7-1, you know, it's going to come down to the two Rams games and Cardinals, or whether you're a 13-win team in the number one seed, or whether you're a 12-win team and not the number one seed.
And that means everything this year, right? Because
yes.
only one team gets the bye, right? So
yes.
being the number one seed means the world. And you got some help this weekend. Again, the Rams lose. The Packers lose. I mean, you're watching these games. Other than the Tampa game, man, how much were you hoping that Daniel Jones, Locke, terrible, whatever his name is, could come up with that two-point conversion at the end of the game and maybe beat Tampa? But, you know, things are breaking your way this year. I mean, you've seen all the other teams lose games that where you're like, man, Vikings are going to sit here and beat the Packers? Yeah, they are, because the NFL is flawed.
Yes.
What has happened to the NFL this year?
Yeah,
I know there's COVID. I know there's all these different things.
Yes.
But I was kind of going through it, Brock. I think there are 12 good teams in the NFL, which in and of itself isn't that bad. There's 12 good teams. And correct me if you think any of these aren't good. Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Tennessee, Indy? You going to say Indy?
Oh,
Indy's a good team?
They're
okay.
Legit.
Kansas City.
Yep.
Green Bay, New Orleans, good team, right?
Yep.
Tampa, I think we have to say it now.
Yep.
Seattle, Arizona, and the Rams.
Yep.
I'm being a little generous there, but I think there's 12 good teams there.
Yes.
The problem is there aren't really many middle class teams this year. You got Chicago. I don't think they're very good, but okay, they've won 5 games. You got to at least call them middle class. You got Cleveland. Same thing there. They've won 5 games. Maybe Vegas.
They're interesting. Super
All right.
Interesting.
Maybe Vegas. San Francisco was there, but now with the injuries, I don't even know if I can go. The problem is after that group, everyone else is terrible.
Yeah.
Like half the league is almost unwatchable this year. That's a lot.
Yes.
That is a lot. I mean, maybe the Dolphins could be in the middle class team, but come on. Do you think they're good? No.
It's almost like these NFL teams entered the season in like round 10 of a heavyweight bout. Just like waiting for the one thing to push them one way or the other.
Yeah.
Like as soon as the season started and it went wrong, like, oh, I'm done. I'm out.
Well,
I'm terrible.
I guess my thinking, and that seems like part of it. Some of it's got to be planning and COVID and all that. But it seemed like it was not that long ago that we were really pumped for the next generation of quarterbacks and kind of what that was going to look like. Except I think since then, Russ's generation seemed to either quit or something. I mean, Luck literally quit. Kyle's boy Dalton's toast. Cam is not the same play. I mean, like a bunch of the guys of Russ's generation have kind of fallen off. The old guys are just barely getting it done. Brady and Breeze. I mean, they're out there and their teams are still good, but they don't look the same as they used to.
And Big Ben, you have to put him on that list, being the undefeated team.
Well, I'm not saying all of them. I mean, Rodgers obviously is still good. Ben's still good. But some of the new crop have either faded or busted. Darnold and Baker Mayfield, Jimmy G, Carson Wentz, terrible, Dak. I mean, like you're looking at those guys. Some are hurt, but a lot of those guys haven't really worked out the way they were supposed to. And so, even Lamar Jackson hasn't been as good this year.
Yep.
So you start looking at where you're at. You got Russ, you got Rodgers, you got Mahomes. I don't even want to quite put Ben Roethlisberger there because he himself hasn't been that good. Their team's been very good. There's only three guys in the league, maybe four, that you absolutely 100% trust a quarterback right now.
Yes. Yeah, and, you have to, and I'm sorry, but you have to consider this offseason. I mean, when you don't practice, when you don't play as a group, when you don't get together, I mean, it is going to have an impact on offense. And the first 4 weeks was just like, oh my gosh, everybody's scoring. This is amazing. This is remarkable. Look at all the scoring in the league. And we thought offense was going to struggle. The defense was going to be ahead. And, I think as time goes on, you give those defenses time to make adjustments and figure this crew out as the weather turns a little bit. And it was a brutal weather weekend all across the country this last weekend. And when you just don't have, and you've not banked thousands of reps together, and why do you think Brady and Breeze, of all those 12 teams you mentioned, Big Ben and Russell and Rodgers, look at them. They're those teams that have still talented quarterbacks, but more than anything, incredibly experienced quarterbacks that know their systems and have banked those reps and have banked and have equity and trust developed. And if you don't, man, you can fall off that cliff pretty fast, which is sadly what that draft class that had Rosen and Darnold and, yes, all of those guys, sadly, have come into this league and just fallen right off.
Now, to be fair, there are some young guys that are kind of fun. They're just not consistent yet. Certainly Kyler Murray and Josh Allen. I mean, those guys are both
and Joe
fun.
Burrow, by the way. Joe Burrow?
Pretty fun.
Done. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's some young guys
who is getting started now.
Yeah. And there's always going to be, but you can't say that you can trust those guys yet, that they're consistent or anything there yet. So I don't know. I just, you also have this group of the guys I like to call future long-term backups.
Like Teddy Bridgewater?
Sure. Yeah. Isn't Drew Lock and aren't Daniel Jones and Drew Lock just future long-term backups in the NFL?
Seems like they're sliding into that Ryan Tannehill sort of mold of
Tannehill's
like,
okay.
Probably not.
Yeah, like, Tannehill's been better.
So does this set up for success, big picture? Everything
it should, and it should also remind us, Brock, that quarterbacks are important and they can be fickle, and it should help us appreciate Russ.
Yes.
I mean, if anything, that you take a look at this and go, gosh, what we have in Russ is amazing.
And then when he
has there were people who didn't want to sign him 2 years ago.
And when he has a 3-interception game and he loses, no one since the merger is better. What, 30 wins off of a loss? I mean, he does not put and let a bad game and a bad interception and those things affect him and carry into the next week at all. It is just and he is just remarkable. And this week's going to be so fun to actually study even more of that game tape and get ready and get even closer to them and watch them. And this Bills matchup's a fascinating one. If you can get this one and you bank yet another win and you're sitting there at 7-1 at the halfway point with, yes, a couple brutal division games still, but what you got in the second half of the year with those bodies that you mentioned defensively coming back into the fold. Yeah, this thing portends to, some real opportunity in January and into February.
Did you have a good thing? Good Halloween, rather. Did you have a good Halloween?
Yeah. It was a solid Halloween. I actually had to work. I had to do a little college football over the weekend, but I know the family had a blast.
Right. You know what the best thing about Halloween is?
Candy.
No. It
Reese's.
Means no.
Kit Kats
dipped
in peanut
butter. The
best thing
about Halloween is that when it's over, you can start preparing yourself for Thanksgiving. Mm. That's the best thing about Halloween. It's like, all right, this thing's done. Now we're ready for Thanksgiving. Like, that's your next holiday.
Wow, okay.
That would be my number one feature of Halloween. So Thanksgiving, now this month, right? Going to look a little bit different, I think, from like Halloween did.
Yeah.
We had a lot of people with candy chutes.
I saw a lot of that. A
lot of candy chutes.
People delivering candy on like little trains.
Yeah,
like
we had
train.
A spider in our neighborhood that came down from scary. The second floor and delivered candy.
Yeah, we had a bunch. Everyone in the neighborhood put tables out at the end of their driveway with bags of candy.
Yes.
Walk around and get that.
So yeah, Halloween looked different. Thanksgiving is obviously going to look a little different. You can follow your senses. Find yourself at the 31st floor and join Ascend Prime for an exquisite, all-inclusive, customizable brunch. Stay safely seated at your socially distanced table while you choose from a revolving carousel of bites and beverages in a contemporary table-side setting. Bites and beverages.
Mm. Yeah.
See, the good thing about Thanksgiving in a restaurant, as I said, this has kind of become my thing over the last few years, is there's a lot of appetizering. Like, you can do a lot of the little bites and then hammer it home with the turkey and et cetera.
Well, there's kind of two things about Thanksgiving, because on the one hand, you get all the staples your family's always done.
Right.
The same things. But then you always have in your mind, like, every family has this a little bit different.
Yes.
Like, there's another 20 dishes my family doesn't do because that's how it's been.
That's a great point.
But here, what you're talking about, you get the chance to actually try all of those other things and not feel guilty that you're passing up on the things you've always had.
Preach, brother.
Said
preach.
The right word too, Howdy.
Oh, this is
dishes.
Like a food man. You
this
sound
is
like
good.
A foodie.
Eliminate
Howdy.
The dishes.
Prepare so your clean. Palate for an enchanting world of never-ending flavors while you take in the panoramic views of the Pacific Northwest. A tableside experience reimagined at an all-inclusive price. You got a book, though. This is going to fill up fast. Go to ascendprime.com. A-S-C-E-N-D prime.com. Ascendprime.com. Get yourself ready for Thanksgiving. All right, Brock, in our continuing long-standing tradition of having all of your various partners on the show, have we ever missed one? We've gotten all your partners on the show over the years, right?
I think so. I think maybe my early, did we ever have Eric Collins?
No, I don't think so. I think starting with Carter Blackburn and kind of going on from there, obviously, famously, Joe Tessitore for some wild rides, wild rides with Joe. But today, pleased for the first time to have Greg Jennings on the show, former wide receiver, of course, and your current partner with Fox. Good morning, Greg. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, good morning. You know what? I pride myself in being a leader, and to hear all of this, I'm a follower. So I should have not come on, and I would have been an outlier being the one and only partner of Brock that just decided to be a leader and not come on the podcast.
Well, I'm realizing as you're talking, don't worry. I think you would have been following them too, because Brock, what's the guy's name you worked with who also did NBA stuff? Mark
Jones.
Mark. I don't think Mark Jones ever came on the show.
No, not a football guy.
Okay,
not a big. He didn't really. I mean, when the NBA game was on in the booth during our college games. So I don't think he would have loved it too much. And Greg, you tried to play all tough on me yesterday. When I asked you to come on, you gave me an absolutely not.
I did. I can mess with you like that now because we have developed a relationship. And I kind of know how you operate as well. So I know you knew I was going to come on, but... Well, it's all good.
Kudos to you. At least you waited until you developed a relationship to start messing with Brock. About a decade ago, I started doing it straight off, and it actually got me a job. So anyway, Greg, thank you for being with us. We always have a bunch of things to talk about, but we got to start with DK Metcalf, because given your background as a wide receiver, given what we're watching here in Seattle, I mean, I guess the obvious question is to start with kind of how good he is now. But in many ways, I'm much more curious, like, what's next for him? Like, where do you think this ends up going for DK Metcalf?
Well, it can go as high and as far as he wants it to go. And I believe he wants to be one of the best to ever do it at that position. He obviously has the ability, the unique talent and skill set. And when you watch him from last year and his progression, his maturation of becoming more confident in route running, being a bigger guy and understanding, I'm just going to outman and physically abuse any defender or opposition that tries to impede me from doing what I want to do. You see it on the field, and then his ability to just be unhuman is unfair. It's just flat out unfair. And so when you add all of those attributes, and you watch him play, and you see who his quarterback is, there is no limit.
The hands, I think, Greg, would have been one of the questions coming out of school. Is he a natural pass, just receiver and catcher? And then the other big one was his short shuttle and change of direction. I think, frankly, those are the only two reasons that he was available for the last pick of the second round when the Seahawks came up and traded for him. I guess just watching him and as he prepared this week and we get to see him in person from just a pure pass receiving, just the hand standpoint and then the change of direction, have you seen massive growth or were those just misevaluations coming out?
No, I definitely don't think that they were misevaluations coming out because even last year we saw opportunities that he had that he missed when it comes to drops. And a lot of that is due to him just not being a natural pass catcher. And what I mean by a natural pass catcher is just a plucker of the football. Like the ball is in the air, you don't let it get into your body and get into your pads where you have an opportunity for it to bounce off. And a lot of guys love to catch the ball that way because it secures, in their mind, it secures the catch immediately from getting jarred away. But when you watch DK Metcalf, even this year from last year, he has made improvement. I wouldn't say it's vast improvement. I think the number one thing for me watching him, he ran a route last 2 days ago, and he immediately got the guy moving and just broke off the slant wide open. If he would have gotten hit, he probably would have scored. It's those types of routes and then pass-catching opportunities with those routes because they're bang-bang. You got to pluck the ball. You got to tuck it away that I want to see him do more, and he's had more opportunity this year to do that because I believe the trust of Russell Wilson and the rapport that they've built has grown drastically.
Greg, you were drafted, in 2006, if I remember correctly. And I'm thinking about the way wide receivers come into the league now versus then. And I remember some earlier conversations, Brock, that you and I had about how it takes a wide receiver 2 or 3 years. It's really not till year three that you can judge a wide receiver. I remember a lot of that revolving around Golden Tate at the time. Are wide receivers coming into the league better prepared now than they used to be, Greg?
Of course, they are. And one of the main reasons why is when you look at the college football game, everything is revolving around this aerial attack, these spread offenses. Now, one thing that I will say that probably takes them a little longer is their ability to really read defenses and understand what defenses are trying to do. Because in the aerial attack, you're not really reading and dissecting so many defenses that show you different looks. That's just not what's going to happen in the college game. But these guys are running a lot of routes. They're getting a lot of opportunities to catch the ball down the field, quick game, bubble screen. And they're being exposed to everything that's necessary to sharpen your skill set to be a better receiver in the National Football League. So these guys are coming in well-prepared, experienced, and the last thing a coach really has to do is just continue to pour in and build that confidence for them to understand, look, you don't have to change who you are. Continue being who you are and just play free.
And I think a perfect example of that, Greg, is Tyler Lockett. And I'm curious, as you watch him and as you study him this week as well, who is he? Who is Tyler Lockett of all the guys that maybe you played with, that you've been around the last couple decades in the NFL? Who is Tyler Lockett?
That's an interesting question. And one guy that comes to mind, and it's a lot of people won't really see this because he didn't have like an amazing NFL career as a receiver, but his ability, his smarts, he's like a mixture between like a Antoine Randall-El because he's so smart, shifty, can do whatever you ask him to do. But then he has this explosiveness of a guy like Sonoris Moss. And it's subtle. Sonoris was obviously everybody knew he was fast. But those two guys, I watched Tyler Lockett, and it's like He's smart. He understands the game of football. He understands how to manipulate his body, how to position himself. The details of being a wide receiver, you have to have it when you're undersized, if you will, like a Tyler Lockett, and you're going up against larger corners, and you're positioning yourself against the sideline and trying to stack receivers. You have to do all the little details correctly, and that's Tyler Lockett.
You didn't hurt for playing with good quarterbacks in your day, right? I mean, you played with some of the best. You're in Green Bay. I mean, you got a chance to play with some really, really good quarterbacks. What do you think it would have been like to catch balls from Russell Wilson?
Man, Russell, he's special. And I had some really good quarterbacks, Hall of Famers. Russell Wilson is a Hall of Famer. He is literally historically great. I mean, you look at his numbers from day one, he's been great. He's been excellent. He's always done it the way you would want a young quarterback, controlling the game, not turning the ball over, kind of methodically doing just enough to show you, okay, yep, he can manage a game. Yep, he can take over a game now in year two and three. Yep, he can just take it and we can put the team on his back in what we're seeing this year. That's what you want in a quarterback. That's what the Seattle Seahawks has. He makes every single throw. He can run. He can escape defenders. He extends the pocket. He has great – there is – honestly, if there is a flaw in Russell Wilson's game, it would be hard to find it.
Can you take me back for a moment to 2006? You get drafted in the second round by the Packers. Brett Favre's a grizzled veteran at this point, right? He's been around forever. He's the biggest name in football. What are you feeling when you first meet Brett and you first start catching balls from him at that point in your career?
It's interesting you said this, because this is how I felt about DK Metcalf and just watching him this week and over the last couple weeks. I felt like I got to do everything right. I just got to catch the ball. Just catch the ball. Just catch the ball. When he throws it to me, just catch the ball. Be where I'm supposed to be. Catch the ball. That was literally, I didn't care about nothing else. I just needed to be where I needed to be and catch the football when he throws it to me, because I knew if I did those two things, he would develop a trust. Even though it wouldn't start off there, it would be kind of that, let's see what this young receiver can do. I know he has talent, but can he handle being where I need him to be? Can he be a smart football player? Can he just do his job as a young player and then turn into a playmaker in the quarterback size? That was me. And when you watch DK Metcalf and a Russell Wilson and the relationship and what Russell has been able to do over the course of his 9-year career thus far, you come in as a young receiver just saying to yourself, okay, just catch the ball. Just be where I need to be assignment sound, catch the ball, and then the trust will grow.
Is that similar to how you approached Chris Myers?
You know, it was a little different because I had yourself, yours, the Mr. Brock Heward himself alongside me to kind of lean into and then to kind of hide behind and cast a shadow over me.
Are you saying Brock's
didn't have to really say it again?
You saying he's your Donald Driver?
Yeah, basically. Basically, you've been my Donald Driver the whole time. So I didn't have to really come out and perform at this great level because I had you.
Right.
And I have you.
Right.
So I'm going to use you.
Hey, my last thing for you. There was some talk, I think post-game, DK kind of mentioned it and talking about it a little bit. And in Tyler and in DK, you don't have that just diva receiver that just going to put themselves out there and tell the world how wonderful they are. They are workmanlike and incredibly gifted. Yet, are they the best duo right now? Are they the best duo in all the NFL?
Man, that's a great question. Watching them, they're definitely up there. I think you have to, as far as wins and losses, which equates into everything, you look down in Atlanta with Julio and Ridley, and if Julio is healthy in the production that they're able to put up, it's hard to beat that duo. But when you look at what they're doing and kind of the arrow that they're trending as far as going up, it's pick your poison. I mean, last week you see Tyler Lockett go for 200 yards. This and literally receivers don't do this. They don't just come okay with not getting the ball. DK Metcalf had two catches last week, and we see the impact that he can have on any game. And we heard nothing. We heard absolutely nothing. That is players understanding how special of an opportunity they have and really enjoying that unit and understanding, look, this guy is just as good. He offers something that I possibly didn't offer this week or a team didn't take or a team took away. And you just understand the greater scheme. And so when you look at that, they're definitely top three.
Can you have too many wide receivers? I mean, can you have, I guess really the question would be, how many good wide receivers can you realistically have on one team?
It all is dependent upon the quarterback. In all honesty, I truly believe it's indicative to the quarterback, on the quarterback to be able to handle it. We see Baker Mayfield and we see all the weapons that he has. And to be honest, it's almost too much. It's almost like less is more for him because there's a pressure that comes with having so many weapons and feeling like I got to get somebody the ball or I didn't get this person the ball this week. I remember in Green Bay, it was myself, Donald Driver, Jordy Nelson, James Jones, and then Randall Cobb comes in the mix. And Aaron did such a great job of spreading the ball around, but we also had such a great close-knit relationship off the field. We were together. On the planes, we were together. Everything we did, we were always together. So we truly and genuinely didn't care who made the play. However, we knew we all wanted to make the play, and we wanted to be the first one to get open because we knew that's where Aaron was going with the ball. So it was a healthy competition that kind of drove us all to be better and held us all accountable.
Well, Greg, we appreciate it, and not just coming on the podcast to hang out a little bit, but also, I mean, putting your relationship. You played with Aaron Rodgers, and now here you are saying nice things about Russell Wilson. I don't know if that gets back to him. I don't know what happens. I don't know if this is going to put you in an awkward spot at some point. But I just wanted to say thank you because that's brave, and not everybody would do that for a new teammate like Brock. So I just want to say thank you for that.
Absolutely, no problem.
Well, there you go, Brock. New partner for you this year, Greg Jennings. I mean, we've really spanned the years with all of your various parts. Is it telling that you haven't worked with anyone for more than a year or two? Is that a thing?
Whoa!
I don't know. I just wonder.
I mean, even Mike left.
Right.
Jeez.
I mean, like, I'm really the only one you've worked with for a long time.
Is it that
you look at it and say, no one can measure up to my one true partner. I can't, like, stay with any of these guys for too long.
I think the shoe and I went through a college spectrum, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. I think the shoe and I went 4 years.
Did you?
I believe so.
I'd have said three.
Really?
I don't know. If it
was did I come out of school early as a junior?
Maybe.
Possibly.
I mean, I know how you view college, sort of.
Well, I know that if you throw in our first year together, he broke me into the profession. Oh, so you lump that on for sure.
That's fair.
For sure, we had. Four,
I mean, Kyle went to Wazoo. He thinks of school sort of a 5-year.
That's
thing.
A 5-year.
So come on.
I mean, if you're on the fast track, some have stretched.
Well, to be fair, you guys also had dinner with the shoe in Pullman. Do you think you could have weathered 4 years?
Yeah, I liked Bob. I mean, I couldn't have weathered 4 weeks with Joe.
But not 4 years of that dinner, but I mean, maybe 4 years of 2 days a week.
I was thinking about that dinner, actually, just the other night, Halloween, because that was over Halloween that we were there. Yeah. And I was thinking to myself, why couldn't Halloween that year have looked like Halloween this year?
That would have been nice.
60 degrees, not a cloud in the sky, the first full moon on Halloween since 1944, a perfect lead-in for Blue 88.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Heward breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
All right, Brock, question one for you here. We talked a little bit about him last week, more in frustration, like, why is he here? But seriously, what's actually happened to Greg Olsen?
Yeah, he's struggling. It's disappointing when you look at the targets over the weekend against the Niners. I think it was nearly perfection to everybody but Greg. Now, some of those were in the red zone, and Russell was not going to put the ball in harm's way, and it would have been impossible, even if Olsen gets up on a ladder, to catch a couple of those. But yeah, just overall, and I said to you, and I echoed in fall camp or in training camp, what I had been hearing from some people inside the Seahawks, and that was, my gosh, this is the best tight end we've had since Zach Miller. I mean, that was really the comp in August, and I just think I think there's a couple factors in place. Number one, we want to pretend that these guys are just not human, that they're robots, especially veterans that are just trained machinery to go out there and just adjust to a new place and have no issues. When in fact, when you're away from your family, when you're removed, when you're on the entire other coast of the country, I think that plays a factor off the field. I, you know, and I'm not going to say that, you know, by fact, but just kind of hearing some stories around, I think it's been a harder, just personal transition in that way. And then on top of it, older guys' bodies just slow down. That is the way it goes over the course of a very long season of getting tested every single day, of obstacles that none of these guys have had in the past. And while those sound like excuses, I think in some ways those are some explanations that, you know, that body is just, it's a little bit more tired. The adjustment's been a little bit more difficult. And certainly, yes, I think there's some frustration for the amount invested in him that could have been invested in some other spots.
All right, question number two. Last week, I think we did the podcast, what, the next day they traded for Dunlop? Or was it even that day? Whatever it was.
That day,
they end up trading for Carlos Dunlap. So he shows up this week. Hopefully we get a chance to see him this coming game. What should we expect?
You're going to see a guy that loves to play football here, that I think is going to be ignited by his new surroundings, by his peers, Mike, by the opportunity he has in front of him. Not too dissimilar to Jadeveon Clowney when he came here out of Houston. Not dissimilar to Dwayne Brown when he came here out of that Bill O'Brien regime as well. But I think even more so coming out of Cincinnati and so much of the losing, stagnant, tired, cheap, broken ways of that organization that Dunlap has had to endure for a long, long time. And you heard that on his Instagram post, which you probably can't play unless you've edited it very well, of just how freaking excited he is to be here, that he has life, that there is light, that you're going to a legitimate Super Bowl contender that needs you, that you don't have. You don't look in that D-line room and go, oh man, what role am I going to play? You could look in that D-line room and go, I'm hitting where in the lineup? Oh, let's go. Let me tee off and do my thing. And then on top of it, just the way that you get treated as a man, the way you get treated as a professional, all of the resources that are thrown your way that we've talked about for a long time over the last decade of food, of nutrition, of science, of health, of everything, of taking care of their assets. And he's going to be a big one. He's physical. That physicality is going to show immediately compared to what we have seen having to play over the last couple weeks. And in particular, a converted wide receiver, a converted tight end who hadn't played DN since high school in Louisiana, in Stephon Sullivan. You're going to see just a difference of physicality. And I think a guy so energized for a run in the second half of a season, unlike anything he's really gotten to do in his professional career.
And I'll just say, I love it when he's one of those guys that came out of school early, Brock, and then went back and got his degree.
Yep.
I got a special soft spot in my heart for anybody who did that.
And I'll tell you, he's going to be a monster against Kyler Murray and against the Rams. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're going to get to the Super Bowl, you're going to win your division first. You're going to get to 13 wins. You're going to have to beat the Rams and the Cardinals at least once, and you know, split now with Arizona after losing to them. And when you look at the disruption I think he can bring to a shorter quarterback like Kyler Murray, his timing is impeccable. His number of passes broken up at the line of scrimmage is instinctual. And then, you know, when it comes to playing Andrew Whitworth in the Rams, you're going to need somebody to set an edge physically. So as much as I like this move, you know, over the big picture, I really like it in those matchups in the division too.
All right, question number three. 7 weeks in, Brock, or 7 games in, who has been the most surprising and the most disappointing Seahawk?
Surprising to see how phenomenal Dwayne Brown is playing. Dwayne Brown, and you saw that, you know, I think beautifully expressed over the broadcast last week with Schlereth talking about the twofer he got on a little swing pass, his health. You know, talk about older players and Greg Olsen, maybe that age and all the wear and tear, you know, starts to get to you. Dwayne Brown looks fresher and better than he's even been the last couple years. And he's setting the pace for an O-line that Pete Carroll was bragging on Sunday, as he should. I mean, when the Seahawks, and I know there's no Bosa and there's no Solomon Thomas and everything else, and they traded Buckner, but do we remember the matchup with the Niners the last couple of years? Do you remember looking at that pocket? Do you remember the harassment that Russell was under? And to see the amount of space and air and time to operate for Russell, it wasn't fair to those backups on the back end of that 49er defense. And Dwayne Brown has set the tone. So, yeah, you know, he's been an all-pro. He's been a Pro Bowler. It's not like it's a surprise that he's still talented. But to look as fresh as he does at this stage of his career in this really awkward kind of 2020 that it is, that's been a very, very pleasant surprise. On the other side, you know, if last week we had a little fun with Bobby Wagner and pushed and challenged him, I'm going to do the same to Quentin Dunbar, because he's not been the player that we watched on tape the last 2 years with the Redskins. He's not been very physical. He's not tackled well. He's not played the ball. He's not pulled the trigger. He just frankly not played well as a corner in this system that, you know, you're paying, what, $4 million to, that you gave up a fifth rounder to, that you really wanted to see, okay, you and Shaq Griffin, you're on the starting line. Who are we going to pay? You know, who's going to have that year, that breakout year, to get that next contract that both of them are so desperately reaching and searching for? And Dunbar, through the first 7 games, been disappointment. You got to be better in the second half of this season.
Oh, Brock, you know this music?
That is Kick It or Punt
No, it's not Kick It or Punt It. How dare you? What's the matter with you?
A punt that.
No. This is Which Is Better music.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a long time, bro.
I know.
You just called me earlier in this podcast a washed-up hack. You said we're just a bunch of washed-up hacks. I
didn't call you.
That.
I said we. I mean, you know, I included myself.
Right.
Which is better? You ready?
Yeah.
Which is better? Jimmy Garoppolo's high ankle sprain, which is going to keep him out for a year, or Russell Wilson's high ankle sprain, which kept him out for, hold on, let me try to remember, no games.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which is better?
Yeah, I think there's just a different makeup between those guys. You know, he's had tore his knee, unfortunately. He had a shoulder injury. You know, I was looking because the amount of money that the Niners owe him next year, I think it's like a $26 million cap hit. And he's just not been a reliable, not been a dependable, and most importantly, Salk, not been available, the most important ability of all. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Mr. Wilson on that one.
Do you think, and I don't want to be, this is not a shot at Russell. Russell's not an ugly guy. He certainly is a beautiful wife. He's a decent-looking man. This is not a shot at Russ. But do you think that it's hard to be tough if you look like Jimmy?
I can only imagine.
Like,
because
I'd
like
that
to think about myself as being incredibly tough.
Right.
But I don't like to think about myself as being all that attractive.
Because you've had to endure being ugly your whole life.
If he is that attractive and tough, I mean, that's superhero quick.
Nobody
stuff.
Is, though. Who's that tough
that.
And that attractive? Right. Name one person.
I mean, that was a lot of my struggle, too, to be fair.
Right. Uh-huh. Me and I'm getting hurt.
You're just me too and beautiful Bedard. To be tough.
Yeah, me and Bedard. Yeah.
Which is better? Starting drives at the 25-yard line or starting drives at maybe the 19?
Where are you going with this?
I'm just wondering which is better.
I mean,
do you prefer to start the drive at the 25, which the league is essentially giving to you for free?
Uh-huh.
Or would you prefer to run balls out of 4 yards deep in the end zone, collide into a player at your own 18 or 19-yard line, and risk a holding penalty to keep you inside the 10? Which is better, Brock?
Well, I kind of liked it when Dante Pettis, you know, from a Seahawk perspective, ran it out and you got to just,
what are they
like,
doing? Knock, they're knock giving you out. The 25.
Yes.
It is so rare to run the ball back farther than the 25.
Correct.
What are these people doing?
I don't know.
I get it when it's short of the end zone. I mean, like, I understand you've got to run that back. It's not college.
Yes.
You can't call the fair catch.
Yep.
But why in the world are they running the ball out of the end zone?
Just trying to be aggressive, man. Make a play, bro. Make a
but
play.
But why is there? Why are they not coached to
you
sit?
You know what I hate? You know what words I hate?
The second it crosses the goal line, do not touch it.
Salk, if I say, oh, just go make a play. If I say that Sunday, text me and say you suck. Mm,
you got a problem with that?
I hate those words. Mm. Just make a play. I'm just trying to make a play.
Stop taking the darn ball out of the end zone, everybody.
How crazy is it that the NFL made these rule changes to kickoffs like 2 years ago, and not a single person in the entire NFL has figured out a way to get people to return kicks at all?
Hey, I had another question along those lines. This isn't quite which is better, but since we were talking about it, it came up during the Monday night game. Should teams rush punts more? So remember which Arizona rushed the punt a couple weeks ago against the Seahawks, and Dixon kind of screwed up the punt, right? Ended up kicking it into the end zone. You saw it in the Monday night game with Tampa and New York, where the Giants rushed the punter, and he ended up shanking one. It was probably his worst punt. Pinion, I think that is. You don't see much in the way of punt returns anymore, right? I mean, it's not like you're setting up a great return and all of a sudden the guy's going to get 12, 15, 20 yards on a punt return. It almost never happens. Wouldn't there be some value in going after the punts and trying to block them with the risk reward there?
Yes, but there's also some risk, right?
Of running into them, right?
Running into a penalty and, you know, and then you put that judgment. So if it's a maybe fourth and more than five. So even if you run into it.
At least running into, not roughing, right?
Correct.
Just, I don't know, teach your guys how to do it. But it seems like there's the advantage, if you do block a punt, is enormous.
Yes.
And by the way, the ancillary benefit may be that he shanks it because he has to rush it.
Correct.
Seems like a lot would be there, yet you don't see teams do it.
Well, that's what the brilliant Coach Judge did and with the Giants, as you
He's
referenced
brilliant.
On Monday night. You know,
brilliant
former
guy.
Special teamer, did it a couple times. So,
Which is better, the NFC East or the SEC?
Bro. What was the Cowboys quarterback name? DiNucci?
Yeah, Joe DiNucci? No, Ben DiNucci.
Oh, I think he's part of one of the famous crime families in the East Coast.
Don Finucci.
Yeah.
Right, from the Panucci Fudge.
Yes.
Do you think of me in those moments? Because those are the moments, as you know, that are the hardest on me.
I think of Jake now, to be fair. You're old.
Do you?
I now think of Jake.
Okay, that's fair. But where I just, like, blew it, man. I watched those, and I'm like, what happened to me?
Yeah.
Why could I have not made it in the... Like, that guy was so bad.
What's happened to Carson Wentz, though? He wasn't much better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he just looked at that and looked at the competition and goes, I can have six turnovers and we still win.
So I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think it happened like that, but I appreciate you saying that.
And be careless with the ball.
Which is better, Ugo Amadi or DJ Reed?
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
I mean, DJ Reed looked pretty. Little Justin Coleman there.
Yep.
Number 29. I mean, coming off the edge, you have one of those little nickel blitzes. Got a pick. Another pass breakup.
At what point do we say that this style of defense that they're playing is just making guys look better in that nickel position? Because it feels like anybody they put in there is just doing well.
It does seem to help.
Oh, you mean a nickel's more suited to run and cover than a base linebacker?
Oh.
Is that what you're implying?
It does seem like that might be true. But anyway, I mean, like, the other one I was going to throw at you was Mayo or Robinson, Alton Robinson. Like, is there a little bit more competition here than, like, if Pete's all about the competition, do we have some guys who may be challenging for jobs?
Well, I think the Mayo and Robinson, there's a much bigger gap. Mayo, obviously, has been, I think, their most active. He's not had the production, not had the finish, not had the sacks. But as far as activity, you mentioned this a couple weeks ago. That guy plays hard.
He does.
He's in the backfield a fair amount. Alton's got two sacks and you know, is I'll tell you, Salk, you know, in we were chatting about the Blue 88 question you asked me about the most pleasant surprise. And, you know, you kind of could say, and I think you did, Damian Lewis, you know, at right guard starting every single game. The fact you're getting contributions from your rookies and those two in particular at the line of scrimmage, and Alton Robinson, Damian Lewis, maybe that speaks to what you said about this league and where it's at and how many flawed teams, and it's giving your rookies some of that launching pad that maybe you didn't think they would have. But yeah, it's sure been nice to see at least getting something, right? And he's on pace, is Alton, for 4.5 sacks,
which would be great.
The Seahawks last year.
Which is better, Pete's shoes or Bruce Arians' mask with the headset taped to his chest like the guy in Speed? Looked like Dennis Hopper in Speed. Which is better?
Oh.
Anything Bruce Arians visually is better, always. The guy's still so red. Like, didn't he quit at the NFL because he almost died? And then they're like, no, he's back now because he's healthy. He looks just as bad as he used to.
Wasn't it because, I thought it was because he was, like, drinking paint or something.
Well, that happened twice in his life. Twice in his life, he was tricked to drink paint by his older brother.
Do you think anybody... people say, actually...
People voted for this man for coach of the year.
NFL head coach of Tom Brady. Tom Brady picked that guy over anybody else.
Yes.
The guy who was twice tricked to drink paint.
But people say, in our friends in Arizona...
Brady's got his cockamamie schemes, too. He might think paint makes you live.
Brady would have tried to drink some paint. Just hearing the story, you know what? He's on to something.
The TV12 Academy really endorses paint drinking.
You know, our friends in Arizona have said... If he were your coach, Saul, you would actually like him because he's blunt, he's Northeast, he's, you know, all
like
of that
him.
Stuff.
Yeah, you're wrong. I don't like that.
But do you think there's anybody that would have, for I guess as honest as he is, transparent, whatever, he just puts it all out there. Do you think there's anybody that's like, Bruce, this thing you got going right here, this little
ridiculous.
Look.
Ridiculous. It's worse than Andy Reid's face shield. All right.
Did it kind of remind you, remember when G. Scott used to wear that Merce around his chest?
It did have a Merce effect.
It did.
Yeah. Mercy me. Brock, which is better? Unpopular take coming from me. I'll just preface it now. Salmon or steelhead?
A salmon.
No.
Yeah.
That's where you're wrong. Steelhead. Yeah. Easier to cook. Hard to screw up. Doesn't need any olive oil even because it is so has so much oil in it. Mm. Steelhead, most underrated fish, and I would argue better than salmon.
Wow.
How about that?
Yeah, I got nothing
you got
for
nothing.
You. That's ludicrous.
You don't
maybe
wanna,
the
you
dumbest
don't
thing
argue.
You've ever said on this show.
You just agree. Which is better, Myers and Schlereth or Myers and Heward?
Oh.
We got Chris Myers and Mark Schlereth, a little hybrid crew this weekend. Which is better?
I'm going to say that Myers and Heward is just phenomenal.
It's a powerhouse.
It's got so much more life, you know? It's more lively and energetic to me.
Is it?
I like that pairing.
They're very different styles, I want to be clear.
Very different.
I admit, I love Mark Schlereth doing games. Love it. He is one of my favorite color guys in the game. I love him. And I know that there is people in the smart 12s get mad and other people get mad at Schlereth and he'll screw some stuff up. I don't care. He reminds me of Phil Simms. He's fun to watch a game with.
Yep.
Brock's smart. Brock's going to give you a lot of analysis, going to tell you what's going on in the game, probably more so than Schlereth, right? Schlereth called it a sprint right option when it wasn't. It was a bootleg. Oh my God, crucify him. I just enjoy watching a game with Mark Schlereth the same way I enjoyed watching a game with Phil Simms.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Schlereth is a talk show host, right? You hear a lot of that.
He's your buddy watching a game with him.
Yes.
I love that.
Yep, he's fun.
I don't need Tony Romo telling me everything that's going on.
Yep. And I try to balance that out, Salk. You're in my head every once in a while. Like, don't be too smart here, okay? You don't know everything. You're an idiot.
Think about Phil.
Yep.
Just think about Phil Simms. Think about how chill out. You just chilled out. It's great.
Yep.
Which is better? Eating leftover candy that you didn't give out on Halloween? Or eating your kids' candy after they've gone to bed.
Oh, man,
this one might break. Which is better?
That was a tough deal.
Both are good. So which is better?
Well, here's the deal. It depends on who is in charge of buying candy.
I'm assuming you were, because you know, I mean, like you got to buy the candy you like. That's what gives eating your own leftover an edge.
But
is it's the candy you chose versus whatever your kids grab
in a two parent home? One parent's
That's
going
fair.
To make the choice.
All right. Well, I'm
now for me, I'm making the choice.
Right.
Because otherwise, we're probably not having a lot of candy to put out. So I'm making the choice to buy the candy that we want to have out there. And I am absolutely making sure that the candy we have is exactly what I want to clean up after.
Right.
So yeah, I'm going to take that.
So that's better than your kid's candy.
Yes. I feel like Howdy's been, this may be his best podcast ever.
He's been on it.
I don't know if that's like Zanino not getting his option picked up. He's got What?
You just had to go there. You know, I've
that was coming up soon.
I'm
it was going to be Mike Zanino or the Mendoza line, which is better.
I'm
finishing
sorry.
My sports lounge. I've got my signed Mike Zanino jersey in a picture frame. I've got my signed Mike Zanino rookie card. That's going to be put up there. Yeah, it's going to be amazing.
It's such a good division series, and then he just was a foot away from every ball in the World
Series.
Yeah,
it's not good.
He just couldn't hit.
I've been crushing my kids' candy after they go to bed.
Why?
I don't know.
It's theirs.
Well, ours got eaten. Everybody ate ours. We
but
didn't
did
have any left.
It? Have they figured it out? Do you take
it? No, they started challenging me on it. Like, where'd you get the Kit Kat, Dad, to dip in the peanut butter? It's like, did you steal our candy? Like, yeah. I did. Which one? I'm not telling you. Who did it come from? Was it from me or from her? Like, yeah, I'm not telling you. And I'm going to take another one tonight. It's called the dad tax. It's what I get for dragging you around the darn neighborhood.
There you go.
I walk around for hours on your holiday. I get a tax of one piece of candy per kid per day. It's only fair.
Only fair.
Yeah, the last two nights, Brock, I've gone Kit Kat dipped in peanut butter, Crunch Bar dipped in peanut butter.
Oh,
yes.
Both excellent decisions.
Wow. Yes.
Mm.
That's what I got. That's what we got today. That's which is better.
That felt right.
Didn't it?
It did.
Mid-season.
Yeah, we needed that. Sort of you texted that earlier in the week. We need it. We needed a little bit.
Yeah, they all came today. To me like in a rush last night. Sure. Like all of a sudden, I had 15, which is better.
In a moment
little candy
of clarity.
Corn rush?
Yes. Huh?
Little candy corn rush?
You know, candy corn came into the house, and it's gross, dude. I don't understand you.
Worse than the candy corn? Like the little candy corn pumpkins. Those are horrendous.
When I want to have fun, well, you know, candy corn or a little candy bar, a little something before I go to bed.
That's right. A little melatonin and candy corn mix. Now that,
nothing's better.
That's good, but just by themselves, not good.
Where are you going this weekend? Where can we see you this weekend?
Did you really just ask that?
What? What?
I have the Seahawks this weekend.
Oh, you do?
About this for weeks.
And I didn't know
what's
that.
Already in this podcast.
You have the Seahawks this weekend? No, you didn't. Yes, I knew that you had a game. Oh, you're going back to Buffalo. You know why? You know why I screwed it up? Honestly.
Why?
Because in my mind, the Seahawks are playing the Rams this weekend.
Okay.
I've had the Seahawks Rams in my head all weekend, and then you said 10 a.m. start, and I was like, 10 a.m.? Right? No, they're playing the Rams. They
good,
can't
Groz.
Play at 10 a.m.
Groz, I know you were listening to everything I was saying.
You know, these shots. No, thankfully, no one's still listening to the podcast. We're at the end. So we're going to wrap this thing up.
No, but to be fair, just for clarification, I actually have a doubleheader.
Oh. Okay.
But one of the first in my life. I have Michigan, Indiana on Saturday, big game. And then I fly from Indianapolis Saturday night to Buffalo, so it's the first time I've ever done a doubleheader. So
have they
Saturday,
relegated
Sunday.
Indiana yet? Are they in a new conference, or are they still
they're
at
good. The they're in the number top 25
what?
In America? Yeah.
There's no way that's true.
It is true. They beat Penn State.
Indiana?
Opening week.
No.
Big
you
one.
Mean
chance to go to 3-0.
Indiana
good.
Did.
Yep.
Were you going to tell me Illinois is good, too? Come on.
No, they're terrible, but I have the Seahawks Sunday. That's where you can watch me, Saul.
There you go. And we're done for the day. Done for the week. Happy election week. Happy everything to all of you. We're getting ready now for Thanksgiving. That's what's next, I promise. Brock, enjoy the game. We'll talk to you next week. Until then, hey.
Barn.
See you, everybody.
Get to the chopper!